The House will come to order. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The House is resolved into committee of the whole. Representative Nicholas.
Committee of the Whole, please come to order. Before we get started, I've got a few tidbits. I was have the House Journal for 1911, so I thought I'd share with you a few interesting House bills. House Bill 85, introduced by Mr. Garland, the request, a bill for an act to compel the support of wives and children by persons chargeable by law with the maintenance thereof, making the failure to do so a misdemeanor and providing penalties, therefore, making desertion of wives and children or repeat violations a felony with a fine of up to $5,000 and 5 years in prison. And just to follow up on some of the consistencies of what we're talking about in this session versus what they were doing in 1911, House Bill number 79 was introduced by Mr. Brown, a bill for an act to provide for the selling of all animals impounded under any ordinance of any of the cities or towns or counties or state of the Wyoming to restrain and prohibiting the running at large of livestock and other animals. And then I got a copy of the Hartville Uplift. If anyone doesn't know where Hartville is, it's here in Laramie County. From January 28, 1911. There wasn't a lot going on because that happened to be a Saturday. But the top front article was that Senator Clark succeeds to the U.S. State Senate on a vote of 46 to 34. So both the Senate and the State House voted, and along party lines in the House, it was 28 votes Republican, ayes, 27 Democrats, no. And that was for his fourth term at the U.S. Senate. Then it's even more interesting if you go over to the Senate file. This is the Senate file from 1911. At that point in time, there was a bill submitted, which was a Senate file, a joint resolution, memorandum number 3, asking for $1 million to 1 million acres to be set aside over to the state of Wyoming, presented to Congress in order to use the sell of the funds from the proceeds of the lands to maintain our roads. And then 2 days later, our good Senator Clark asked for 2 million acres instead of 1 million acres when he got before Congress. So I thought that was interesting. In 1911, there were six counties that were created by the 1911 legislature: Campbell County, Platte County, Goshen County, Hot Springs County, Niobrara County, and Washakie County. And I've got an article from our good representative from Washakie County will like this. This is from the Wirland Grit, G-I-R-T, on January 28th. It said, it looks like the county will come to fruition. And after Washakie County is created, it reads, I quote, "The bill has gone to the House and next week will most likely pass result. This will lead to one of the most richest counties in the state of Wyoming." Then finally, I've got, there were two counties, by the way, that didn't make it. One was the Golden Prairie County, which would have been the eastern half of Laramie County, and also Wyoming County, which would be the western half of Sweetwater County, and those ones did not pass. And then finally, in the Wyoming Tribune, there was an article that said, "Dogs without muzzles shot. Dogs found on the street without muzzles will be shot." This is the edict of the chief of police, and he has engaged five special men to keep a lookout for all dogs on the loose. Mr. Harkin.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Representative Harshman.
Privilege of the floor, please. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, it's not very often we get folks here from Casper. And as you know, number one on your license plates, number one in your heart. And and I have to apologize. I brought him down here down a rabbit trail on a bad bill of mine, but he was good enough to come down and help me with it anyway. So I'd like to introduce, there's two NCHSs in the state of Wyoming. One's Niobrara County High School, and the other's Natrona County High School. And the principal of Natrona County High School, Mr. Dean Kelly. Welcome.
Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I woke up this morning, I was fairly ambitious on where I had intended our goal to be today. After hearing our debate this morning, I've backed off on proceeding that far. My intent is to go to House Bill 107 or 4 o'clock, whichever comes first.
Okay. The first bill for consideration is House Bill 61. The reading clerk will read the bill, please.
House Bill 61, introduced by the Water Committee from Agriculture, an act relating to water development projects. This bill was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Camel, Davison, Eklund, Hunt, Laux, Moniz, Semlek, Zwanitzer, Dan. The bill was further referred to the Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Escobel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace. Signed, Representing Berger, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that House Bill number 61 do pass. Members of the House, I want to give you just kind of a brief overview of how the water development program works in Wyoming and help you understand that this bill you have before you has received a lot of scrutiny. The first place that these projects are end up in is our Water Development Commission. Those are 10 members. There's two from each water division, one member at large and one tribal member. The second set of eyes, so to speak, that look at these projects is your Legislative Select Water Committee. Those are six senators and six representatives. And there's advisors from the State Engineer's Office and the Attorney General's representatives. They attend all of our meetings. So these projects have had quite a little bit of scrutiny by the time they get to the House Ag Committee. And just a little bit more of information before we start into the bill. The funding sources for these projects come out of a severance tax distribution of 12.45%. And then we get interest on the loans that are out there, and then we get principal payments on the loans. Most of these projects go out on a two-thirds grant and a one-third loan basis to the project sponsors, which can include municipalities, irrigation districts, and special districts. The starting down through the bill, before we do that, I will tell you that we thought we were going to hear this bill yesterday on general file, and this was little cheat sheet was distributed. I don't know if you're able to find that, but that's kind of a brief summary of the bills that are projects that are in the bill. Then also you have received this book, Wyoming Water Development Commission Omnibus Water Bill Planning. This is the first of two bills that you will see coming through the House this year. The planning bill is what we'll discuss now. The construction bill starts on the other side, and we'll be looking at that later on in the session. So if you have your cheat sheet and you're interested in looking at how they correspond, there's tabs in this book, and the detailed explanation of all those projects you'll be able to find in this book. So I won't spend a lot of time talking about those. The level one and two studies in the first section on page one of the bill, those are proposals for new projects. Those are looking for some alternatives for problem-solving issues that have come before the Water Development Commission, again sponsored by public entities that I just talked about. So there's a list of those projects there. For example, on the Hanna Master Plan, the concern there was in Carbon County, there's about 50% of the water is unaccounted for in those wells. So we're trying to take a look and see how we can deal with that. The Rollins Operation Study, for example, those are there's four different water supplies there, and they're trying to blend all those different sources to get one. So they're looking at those different projects and see which one alternative might be the best. And then when you get down on level two projects in section two, those are really checking the feasibility of the studies that they looked at in the previous section of the bill. You can see the total on those is $1.4 million approximately on the reconnaissance studies on the new development. And then over on page three, there's a list of some of the new development projects that have come out of the feasibility studies. These are the alternatives that have been selected. Just to pick out a couple to give you an idea of what we're doing there, the Lance Creek well and the Manville on line 22 and 23, we have some problems there with arsenic and uranium in those wells, so there's appropriations for those. Total appropriation there is $1.7 million. And then over on the storage, on page four, the feasibility studies for the storage, you can see a list of those projects there, and the total there is $1.5 million. The total amount that we have available for us for this go-around is $36 million, and this planning bill will take $3.16 million of that amount, and the construction bill that we'll see later take over $25 million. That'll leave us for next year $8.8 million. And so that is really kind of a quick run-through of this planning bill, and I guess I would stand for any questions.
Question being called for. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay. House Bill number 61, having passed the Committee of the Whole. The next matter before Committee of the Whole is Joint Resolution number 6. Chairman McComey, could we please read the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I have to read it first, sir.
Reading clerk will read the bill.
House Joint Resolution number 6, introduced by Representative Hunt, a joint resolution regarding private property protection. This bill was referred to Committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Botten, Davison, Yagi, McKim, McComey, Petroff, Shepperson, no, Connolly, signed Representative McComey, Chairman.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with the recommendation that House Joint Resolution 6 do pass. And, Mr. Chairman, with that, I'd like to turn it over to the good sponsor from around the state. This is a statewide project.
Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would first like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. This amendment adds a little bit to what the resolution already says. The original resolution is directed at state-level officials and then the U.S. Congress and the President, but this would also include all elected officials of political subdivisions of the state. And so that just sort of explains that little addition with that amendment. So I ask that it be moved.
Questions will be called for Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 has passed. We'll go back to the original joint resolution. Question has been called on the joint resolution number 6. All those in favor say aye. Okay. Point of order. Mr. Hunt, would you please explain the joint motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This joint resolution is a resolution concerning private property rights, and it doesn't really change anything point any flaw. It just simply asks that. And it points out that under the United States Constitution, and for that matter the state constitution, that private property rights are God-given and should not be trampled on. And it sort of is a direction, a beacon, a little reminder to all elected officials that before they should ever consider a bill that may infringe on private property rights, that they should first refer to the Constitution of the United States and or of the state of Wyoming so that they do not infringe on those rights that have been given to us. And once again, it's directed at all elected officials, and that about sums it up. I would stand for any questions anybody might have.
Discussion. Question being called. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Joint resolution number 6 having passed the committee as a whole. Going now to House Bill number 160. Can we please read the bill?
House Bill 160, introduced by the Management Audit and Act relating to legislative oversight. This bill was referred to Committee number 1, Judiciary, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Barbudo, Brechtel, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Peasley, Throne. Signed, Representative Brown, Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 160 do pass, and I turn the explanation of the bill over to the representative from District 55.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a bill from your Management Audit Committee, and it's clarifying the subpoena power of that particular committee. In the Management Audit Committee that goes in and audits some of our state agencies, one of the agencies this year was not 100% forthcoming in the responses, and the staff had a little bit of trouble getting some clear answers. So we discussed this in committee. We were unclear whether the existing statutes actually allowed the Management Audit Committee to issue a subpoena. It's clear in the statute. You look on page 1. It's not clear on the statute. Look on page 1, lines 14 through 16. It says the presiding officer of either house of the legislature, the council, or a committee may issue a subpoena. And it was our staff's opinion that that committee comment there meant the standing committees, and the Management Audit Committee is not a standing committee. So with that, on page 2, we've inserted the power for the Management Audit Committee on lines 1 and 2 to use the same statute that the President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House plus the chairs of all of the standing committees have to request a subpoena. And an item H is added to the Management Committee section of 28.8.107 authorizing this. So with that, if there's no discussion, I ask for your favorable vote.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to give you a little history, because take a moment, because the Audit Committee to me is an incredibly important operation of your legislature, House and Senate. And we have seen a diminishment of its value and its use, in particularly in the last 2 years. What has happened over the period of time is that the Audit Committee was a standing committee all unto itself, and the Research Department was a division all unto itself. Over the period of time, for the simplification of management, you took all of it and put it in under the Management Council. And when that happened, then the audit capabilities were slighted, not because of any intent, but rather because of just the structure and the formation. Very, very important that the Audit Committee be granted and have, in your behalf, the ability to subpoena witnesses and or documents for the use of the total part of a fiscal as well as a management audit. So I just wanted to try to impress on you that the Audit Committee is an incredibly important tool that the legislature has, and we should not put any kind of constraints on its ability to find records and or management policies themselves. So,
further discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of House Bill 160, so that with a due pass recommendation, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. House Bill 160 has passed the Committee of the Whole. We will have the reading of House Bill 182.
House Bill 182, introduced by Representative Throne, an act relating to education student assessment measures. This bill was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Brechtel, Burkhart, Connolly, Freeman, Croker, Crone, Laux, Madden, Teeters, signed Representative Teeters, Chairman.
Chairman Teeters, what's your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 182 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I turn the sponsorship of the bill over to the good lady from the capital city.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, good Chairman of Education. Today I bring to you House Bill 182 and would ask for your favorable consideration. The purpose of House Bill 182 is in response to the recently released management audit report of December 15th, which highlighted that there are a number of areas of our statewide assessment that are not being utilized by the districts, and the districts don't see a need to utilize them. And we are spending a lot of money, a total of $78 million over the last, and that includes 2011-2012, so that's since the 2005-06 fiscal year, on the statewide assessment. My basic philosophy in bringing this bill is we need more teaching and less testing, particularly testing that the public has lost faith in, testing that the teachers don't find useful, and testing that disrupts, at least in my district and other districts around the state, roughly 3 weeks of the school year. We do, just to give the body notice, we do, we'll have a second reading amendment to make some clarifications. But the basic concept is that we will scale back pause to what is the minimum federal requirement. So that would eliminate what's commonly referred to as the traffic signal process that the teachers aren't using, and it would also eliminate the writing essay portion. This should take less time, should allow teachers and parents to receive the test scores in a more timely manner, will free up class time, and will cost less money. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Discussion. Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The question that I have is, we have a contract that is signed and has a term to it. Does this bill then negate that contract? Or if so, how do we then stand with the Elementary Secondary Education Act as it is concurrently written? In light of what you're trying to do. I understand what you're trying to do, but I don't understand how fiscally you're going to be able to do it and what the impact of that is relative to the Elementary Secondary Education Act.
Excuse me.
Thank you.
Representative Throne.
Mr. Chairman, in response to the good representative from the North, we may have to make some adjustments in the dates. We're waiting for some information on the contract from the state folks, and we're working with them. It may be that this cannot be fully implemented until 2013, but we would certainly like to begin scaling back to the extent possible in the 2011-2012 school year. In terms of federal compliance, the federal government would have to review our program again, but as long as we're doing what's federally required, there should not be any risk to our federal funding. It's certainly not the intent of this bill to do anything that would jeopardize the ESEA money.
Further discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Teeter's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it will do so with a recommendation of due pass for House Bill number 182. Please say aye. Those opposed? House Bill 182 has passed the Committee of the Whole. We'll have the reading of House Bill 35.
House Bill 35, introduced by Representative Brechtel, an act relating to Health Care Choice and Protection Act. This bill was referred to Committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Gay, Gingrich, Green, Hunt, Peasley, No, Barbuto, Kraft, Harvey, Miller. Signed, Representative Harvey, Chairman.
Representative Harvey, what's your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 35 do pass. And I would turn the explanation of the bill over to this prime sponsor.
Representative Brechtel.
Mr. Chairman, should we also move the standing committee amendment?
Representative Harvey.
My apologies, Mr. Chairman. I also move, and I further move the adoption of the standing committee amendments, and I, too, will leave that explanation up to the fine sponsor.
Representative Brechtel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think you probably just received a handout that looks kind of like this here. It's a flow chart. What I'd like to do is just kind of talk about the reasons for the bill quick and describe what I'm doing here, and then I will go through the explanation of the bill and the standing committee amendment. As we all know, the new federal health care law, the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act, is slowly going into effect. And here's just a few of my concerns. It is, I believe, government takeover of health care. It will drive up the health care costs. It will strip out $3 trillion out of Medicare over the next 20 years as one method of beginning to balance the health care budget. It's going to lead to more government rationing of health care. It will discourage technical advancements of private investment and innovation. It will necessarily lead to higher taxes. It will encourage more runaway spending. It will lead to higher deficits. I believe it will lead to lower quality of health care. Its economic pressures, I believe, will tend to drive towards more stagnated economy growth in our nation. There's effectively nothing in the new law that really reduces the cost of health care, and even the CBO seems to admit that. What we have, in fact, is 159 new agencies and boards with lots of rulemaking authority to greatly expand bureaucracy and size of government. The actual repeal of the law and doing it over the way we should will probably take a couple of years at best. So I believe that we need to take action now and not wait for the total destruction of our health care system and protecting the rights of our citizens to choose their own health care. This is the reason for HB 35 and my purpose to get it passed. All elected officials have a sworn duty to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States, and in so doing so, it is our responsibility to defend the constitutional guarantees of our citizens. We do not argue that the U.S. Constitution is the supreme law of the land. However, we do oppose federal dictate when such authority is not properly moored within the Constitution, especially when personal liberty is endangered. HB 35 is a statutory remedy to immediately safeguard citizen rights. I believe it's a safety net to protect our citizens' rights to choose. This legislation addresses the entire federal law, and I believe it must do so to restrict future enactment of potentially portions of the law that could come back to haunt us later. The question of whether the federal government has the authority to mandate the purchase of health care is not the only issue at hand. If Congress fails in its attempt to repeal the entire law, the remnants will remain as a tool for gradual future takeover. I believe that we must act. There is no other bill in this legislative session that does what this bill does. HB 35 does not oppose good health care reform, nor does it take away anyone's personal right to select whatever health care plan they want, even including the new federal health care plans. HB 35 does provide our Wyoming citizens with a defense against the federal mandates. We find our protections of limited federal power in the Ninth and Tenth Amendments of the U.S. Constitution, but we need not rely entirely on our own interpretation of these amendments. The Wyoming Constitution provides clarity as to what Congress agreed to
regarding our rights. At the time of congressional admission of Wyoming as a state in 1889, Congress seemed to have much more concern about allowing women the right to vote than they did any other aspects of our Constitution. Apart from these sections of our Constitution, I find no resistance in Wyoming's language protecting state and citizens' rights. Our Wyoming Constitution is our contract as a state with the federal government. So what did Congress agree to? Article 1, Section 1, all power is inherent in the people. All free government are founded on their authority and instituted for the peace, safety, and happiness for the advancement of these ends, and they have at all times an inalienable and indefeasible right to alter or reform or abolish government in any such manner as they think proper. Article 1, Section 7, absolute arbitrary power over the lives and liberty and property of free men exists nowhere in a republic, not even in the largest majority. I will now walk you through the bill. And as I do so, I will comment on the where the Standing Committee Amendment made some changes. On page 2 of the bill, we have definitions, the borders of Wyoming, health care services, modes of securing, and penalties. On page 4, we have some legislative findings to basically secure what I just discussed. I will note that on line 7 through line 17, this section, small I, was moved to page 7 to make the bill flow a little bit nicer. On line 20, we changed from legislature to legislators. Continuing with findings, and as I had already discussed on the 9th and 10th Amendments, and then through page 6, talking about Article 1, Section 1 of the Wyoming Constitution, all powers inherent in the people. Article 1, Section 7 provides that absolute arbitrary power over the lives and property of free men exists nowhere, as already discussed. Article 1, Section 1, 7, sole and exclusive rights of for citizens to govern themselves. In Romanette 8, the on page 7, the Declaration of Independence, down on line 13, the Standing Committee, beginning there, the Standing Committee Amendment reduces the penalties that was originally in the bill. And continuing over on page 8, we continue to reduce the penalties from felony to misdemeanor. And actually, there's going to be another amendment coming along after this. At the bottom of page 8, the Standing Committee Amendment eliminated, starting at line 20, on page 8 down through 24, that language was eliminated, as was the language on page 9 from line 1 through line 4. And there was some disagreement as to how much power we should put into the possibility of electors petitioning for defense of citizens. But we do have on page 8, line 14, beginning there. And there was a small change there in the standing a committee amendment where the Attorney General may instead of shall defend citizens who may be brought to prosecution by the federal government. Over on page 9, down on line 19, the first couple lines were eliminated so that the line would begin reading, every person within the borders of Wyoming is and shall be free to choose, decline, or choose any mode of securing health care services without penalty or threat of penalty. And then on page 2, the citizens of Wyoming essentially have their power of contract with whoever they want to have for health care services. With that, Mr. Chairman, that really explains the bill, and I would call for a question on the standing committee amendment, and then I will stand for questions.
Question being called on the standing committee of the whole amendment number one.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. I think we're voting on the standing committee amendment.
Standing committee amendment number one. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing committee amendment number one has passed. We will now go to the bill. Chairman Korber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, at this time, I would like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 35 and ask for your favorable consideration. This amendment looks a little bit draconian. It looks a little nasty because it's a two-pager, but it's. I'm going to tell you about the simple part that required the renumbering of everything, and then we'll focus on the meat of the amendment itself. But in essence, if you will turn to page 7 of the bill, in the standing committee amendment, we had moved let's start on page 4. Page 4, I want to explain this so you understand. On page 4, lines 7 through 17, the standing committee amendment moved that section over to page 7. The committee of the whole amendment merely puts that section under its own heading, titled Declaration of Invalidity, and then it makes section 6-5-405 enforcement of the federal laws. So it really just makes the Declaration of Invalidity its own section, and then 6-5-405 now becomes enforcement of federal laws. So that necessitated a lot of renumbering. The heart of the amendment itself, if you will look at your Committee of the Whole Amendment and go down to line 37, and on your Committee of the Whole Amendment, line 37, it will direct you to page 8, and the Committee of the Whole Amendment deletes entirely lines 1 through 9 on page 8. That is the meat of that amendment, and for those of you, that deletes the part that states that if you work for the federal government, that you cannot come into our state and enforce the Affordable Care Act. And I'm bringing this amendment, Mr. Chairman, because I just believe that individuals who work for the federal government take an oath to uphold the laws of the federal government. And so to tell them they cannot come into our state and enforce the Affordable Care Act, I felt was just putting, it just lacked common sense because they're hired to enforce federal laws just like our state, our people are hired to enforce federal laws, are hired to enforce state laws. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I brought this amendment to delete that part of House Bill 35, and I would stand for questions on that particular section. Thank you.
Representative Greer.
Yeah, our Regal chairman. Thank you. To the good chairman, does it also, that amendment, I had a hard time tracking it. I just looked at it. Does it also delete the penalty for our Wyoming public servants?
Representative Corbett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, it does not. It deals strictly with the federal individuals who take an oath to uphold federal laws. That's the extent of my amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Greer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I am for this amendment, but would also just raise a point that we should go a step further. I am concerned with making it a crime for our public servants to enforce or attempt to enforce this law. And I think it can be an amendment on second reading that could simply say that they do not knowingly or with reckless disregard of the invalidity statement. And, you know, this speaks for itself. This is a very complex set of laws, and we're going to have our public servants out there who may inadvertently do this. And I think we need to soften that language before we make it a crime for someone to do that. And I'll look at that maybe a little bit later on. It's something we need to consider.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman, a question for the bringer with respect to the language on the bottom of page 7. How would that work if we create a situation where we adopt some part of the federal law that requires someone to do something that under state law would be a crime? How is that going to be resolved, and how are we going to know for sure that we haven't done that given the length and breadth of this thing?
Chairman Corbin.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm assuming that my good colleague from Albany County supports Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. But let's speak, I guess, to page 2, the part about the state officials. I guess from my standpoint, of course, this is language that was is identical to language that was put into a bill we passed last year, the Firearms Freedom Act, which is now law and was signed by the good gentleman downstairs, the prior administration. My point in not taking page 7 out in the Committee of the Whole Amendment, the bottom of page 7, which would now be, I guess, technically 6-5-405, was that I did not want the people, or I did not want state agencies to be the policemen for this federal act. I did not want them to have to go out and enforce this federal act and arrest Wyoming citizens who chose not to comply or small businesses who chose not to comply. I deliberately use the word enforce. I just did not want them to be the policemen for the Affordable Care Act, and that was why I left that in and just took out the part that affected the people that were employed by the federal government. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I spoke with the good chairman about this morning and agreed with the philosophy, but now I'm wondering about the consequences. And I'm looking on the chart that looks like a bunch of dots and squiggled lines. And reading in some of the microscopic print, it says state Medicaid agencies. And I'm wondering if the intent is, by leaving in the state part, to make it illegal for the state Medicaid folks to enforce Medicaid fraud actions.
Amy Corber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess at this point that can certainly be a second reading amendment that can be brought from the floor. The crux of this Committee of the Whole amendment is on page 8, the deletion of lines 1 through 9. And if no one has any questions about that particular part of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, I would call for the question on the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1.
(Clears throat) Although the question being called for the Committee of Whole Amendment number one, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The Committee as a Whole Amendment number one has been adopted. Back onto the bill. Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I looked at this, it was handed out. That's a maze, and I was amazed, and I don't know if anybody can follow that, but then I just happened to have here a little document. This is the one, the only, the Patient Protecting and Affordable Care Act.
Mr. Chairman, point of order. I don't believe it's appropriate to use props.
Excuse me, whatever we call this thing, it's big and it's thick, and a lot of our congressmen haven't even read it or say so.
Further discussion?
Just carry on? Okay. What I'm saying, I guess, just in essence, forget the little things that we don't have copies of. I'm just afraid this bill that we're looking at, if we don't have some things in our legislative jurisdiction that makes us have to have this thrust upon us, I'm not sure we want that. And so I'm standing up for our Second Amendment, our Ninth Amendment, Second Amendment. That's a different one. I'll get to that another time. But our Ninth and Tenth Amendment. And I just really think Wyoming can do a much better job than this piece of paper that we have. And so I'm just standing up for House Bill 35. I think it's just something we really need.
Further discussion?
Perfectly legal to hold that.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I think I agree wholeheartedly with most of what the previous speaker said in both the impact and our need to defend ourselves against the impact of the ACA. I guess the one concern I do have is we want to make sure that we use the right tools. You know, it's like if you go and decide you're going to cut down a tree, you can use a chainsaw and get the job done quickly. You can use an axe and take a lot more effort, but you get the job done eventually. Or you can use a baseball bat and you don't make much progress on what you intend to accomplish, but you sort of feel better afterwards. And I think what we have in front of us is really a baseball bat. And that's why I want to be a little careful, because in looking at the bill as set out, it says the ACA is unconstitutional, which I think even those folks representing us in litigation, certainly some parts I believe are unconstitutional, but there's parts of that bill that, while unquestionably bad policy, are unquestionably constitutional. I mean, those dealing with regulation of Medicare and Medicaid, some of those things are things that the government has been doing forever and have never been deemed to be unconstitutional. And so some of these concerns were raised earlier, but looking at the prohibition of officials and what they can do, I mean, we make fun of the people out east who voted for this bill and passed it without reading it. And I would say that if you don't know what's in the bill and you vote for this, you look equally foolish, because in the bill that went through Congress, one of the main provisions of it, or a main provision of it, does deal with Medicare, Medicaid fraud. And it sets up systems for additional analysis of claims, investigation of fraud, prosecution of fraud, all those sorts of things. We know our own AG's office is engaged in those efforts and likely will be utilizing some of those provisions in doing their jobs. And so we set up a provision that now says that the AG's office, while pursuing Medicaid fraud, are in violation of Wyoming law and are subject to criminal penalties. And so I wholeheartedly agree with the spirit of this bill and the courage of those who have brought the bill, I think we need to just be very careful in how we think this through so that we're not sort of cutting off our nose to spite our face.
Further discussion? Representative Brechtel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just encourage you to support this. First of all, where we're moving to on this, and it sounds like we're probably looking at a second amendment on this thing, but this bill is basically moving towards keeping the health care mandates of the federal government under the purview of this body, and I think that's what we owe to our citizens. I don't think it's our intention to obstruct what really needs to be done in terms of providing health care or providing for those services based on the new law.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess a question, and to dovetail onto comments of the previous speaker, I don't know how many of you feel like I do, but I feel very woefully inadequate to comment on this to the detail necessary, mainly because, and I think the handout, the schematic, if you will, that was handed out actually amplifies some of my insecurities in commenting on this. How can any of us stand up today and say with any certainty that we know what will happen, what will be the consequences or unintended consequences of passing a bill of this nature? And how I'm going to bring some focus to that discussion is by, I've got a copy of one email here in front of me. Now, there's been a lot of comments made in the last week or so, personally and publicly. It seems like a lot of my friends and neighbors here have not heard from anyone who is participating or supportive of the implementation of this health care reform, ACA. I can tell you I hear from a lot of my constituents who are using parts of this plan. Now, in fact, a wonderful young lady who contracted a disease, and I forget the name of this. I have to some autoimmune disease that caught this at the age of 20. After several months, denied coverage for insurance, high costs, monthly insurance costs, shots, and ultimately this person now is benefiting from a very low-cost insurance plan and is getting medication they need, in fact, due to the implementation of the health care reform bill. This is only one person who has talked to me. My question, to bring focus to this, and I hope someone can answer this, on page 9, section 406, protection of health care choice. The way I read this, it does seem to be permissive, I guess, for someone to participate in this plan or in certain benefit from the implementation of the Health Care Reform Act, if they would like. But then I see language somewhere else in this bill, in House Bill 35, that the way I read it, whoever helps a person, maybe at a state employee or whatever, may be violating a portion of this act and committing a crime by helping someone obtain this. And of course, to use a term, to build on that again, my good colleague from Appropriations Committee using a term schizophrenic, where we would vote on a bill such as this, not knowing how it interacts with some of the other pieces of legislation that
that we're voting on. And I would maintain good bills, like the bill we voted on today, giving some money for primary care, community health centers, that it doesn't take much investigation to realize that this is a component of the ACA. Again, as far as our ability to seek out health insurance across state lines, another component of that, and some would go as far as to say that this is the backbone of cost containment for implementation of health care reform. And without it, of course, we will see the skyrocketing costs. So, I mean, again, I get conflicted and confused at every twist and turn when I try to investigate this, and I just got to tell you, in clear conscience, I just can't vote for this thing.
Representative Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and in favor of this proposed bill, and I'm going to give you a little thing that happened to the state of Wyoming between November and the end of December. The federal government took some actions that needed a response that we were unable to get back to them with a defined answer. And they took that lack of response and then published that Wyoming was in support of their actions. And so I think it's important on every case we can where we don't think we're being fairly treated by the federal government, we need to push back, because the net of not pushing back is a belief that you agree. And if you don't agree, if you don't push back, then you're swept into a group that are in support. And we're not in support of this federal takeover of a very important component of our nation and our health care system. So we've experienced it in the energy sector in the end of the last year, and I don't want us to do the same thing of missing opportunities to push back this year.
For discussion. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to point out this isn't anything unique. This has actually been going on since the beginning of our union. In particular, what this is nullification. And nullification is a legal theory that U.S. states have the right to nullify or invalidate any federal law which the state has deemed unconstitutional. The theory is based on the view that the states form the union and, as the creators of the compact, hold final authority regarding the limits of the power of the central government. Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, did the same exact thing with the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions when they didn't agree with the Alien and Sedition Acts that the federal government had done in the early 1800s. The most famous one is John C. Calhoun in 1828. There was a federal tariff that came down on South Carolina, and South Carolina did this almost same exact bill. So this isn't anything unique. This is our means by which we say we don't like this. You know, our governor is fighting in the courts. This is our chance to agree with him and to pass something that says we do not like this law and we find it to be unconstitutional. And as one of the sovereign states that form the union, that we are not agreeing with the central government. So I don't find this to be that earth-shattering. This has been done throughout the last 200 years by many states, and I would urge you to vote yes.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Harvey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation of due pass for House Bill number 35, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no.
No.
The floor is in doubt. All those in favor, please stand. House Bill 35 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The reading clerk will please. The next bill, House Bill 152.
House Bill 152, introduced by Representative Semlich, an act relating to Environmental Equality Act, very rare or uncommon area designations. This bill was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Camel, Davison, Eklund, Hunt, Laux, Moniz, Semlich, No, Blake, Swanitzer, Dan, signed Vice Chairman Swanitzer, Dan.
Chairman Semlich, you've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 152 do pass, and I will explain the bill. First of all, I would say that, let you know that 2 years ago we worked on this issue. We made some changes to the Environmental Equality Act with respect to very rare and uncommon. The legislature passed the bill, and it got downstairs and run into a little problem. So this is the next, our next attempt, our next rendition to try to deal with this problem. And the first thing I want to point out to you is the change that has occurred in the bill on page 3, and then I'll explain some other aspects of the very rare and uncommon. But I want you to know this first, that what this, one of the things that this bill does is say that no new designations under this section after July 1 can be made, and but the council retains authority to remove the designations prior to the state. So I need to give you some background material on this as quickly as I can. The Wyoming Environmental Quality Act was enacted in 1973 and amended in 1977 to include the provisions of very rare and uncommon protection of certain lands in the state. This was shortly before the Federal Land Management and Planning Act was passed in 1976. So at this time, there was no federal land management agency had any approved land management plans. And because of the absence of these plans, the Wyoming Environmental Quality Act was established to address some of these areas around our state that was believed to be very rare and uncommon. So I think it's important to let you know that during the past 31 years, there's been very few of these designations made. But since that time, all of the federal agencies have implemented with full public participation approved land management plans that address the very intent of the very rare and uncommon statute. The principal effect of the Environmental Quality Act designation of very rare and uncommon is found in 3511-406 and has to do with the application for mining permits. And there in that statute under Section M, it says the request to permit other than a surface coal mining permit shall be granted, and there's four things listed there. And one of the things that affect this bill is that the proposed mining operation would be irreparably harmed, destroyed, or materially impaired in any area that has been designated by the council as very rare and uncommon. So that's really the implication of having the very rare and uncommon statute in the book. The Environmental Quality Council consists of seven members that are appointed by the governor, and with the consent of the Senate, the EQC has broad powers to set environmental standards and decide all cases and issues related to air, land, water quality, solid and hazardous waste management. Again, the Environmental Quality Act was established in 1973 and amended in 77 to contain the provisions of very rare and uncommon. Very rare and uncommon designation process works like this. Any person can file a petition to designate lands as very rare and uncommon. The land must have the attributes that are special because of historical, archaeological, wildlife, surface, geological, botanical, or scenic values. And then the Environmental Quality Council will decide whether the petition shall be accepted or dismissed. The next point I want to make is that
in the Section 112 of the Environmental Quality Act, the EQC gives unilateral powers to take private property rights on all lands it considers to be very rare and uncommon, and having that have particular historical, archaeological, wildlife, surface, geologic, botanical, or scenic value. And the EQC may designate any land as very rare and uncommon, including private surface, private minerals, private surface, federal minerals, federal surface or federal mineral lands, or state surface or state mineral lands. There's no oversight of the EQC's power to take these private property rights. The seven members of the EQC, again, they are appointed by the governor, and not even the governor can block this designation. In Section 1001B of the Environmental Quality Act, it recognizes that a designation of very rare and uncommon is an unconstitutional taking of a property right without compensation. That was pretty concerning to me, and that's one of the reasons why I bring you this bill. Another point that I want to talk to you about is the immediate and direct effect of a very rare and uncommon area designation is to block surface mining in an area whether mining has been proposed or not. The final point is the designation of a very rare and uncommon area is equivalent to the designation of a wilderness area. Both permanently withdraw land from any use or activity that may alter the land surface. No agency of the federal government has the authority to designate a wilderness area. Only Congress has that right. So what we have here is a designation that's made by an unelected board that has some of the same powers of the designation of a wilderness area, and no one can vote on it. Kind of in summary, the EQC designation of land as very rare and common, I don't believe, is no longer needed. One point would be because of the federal land management planning was established in 1976, and in the succeeding years, the federal lands have all been protected by management plans implementing environmental protection, such as wilderness areas, roadless areas, botanical areas, mineral withdrawal areas, and some I'm sure I can't think of. A state agency placing a designation on federal lands, like very rare and uncommon, like we have done in the past, they're redundant. They're confusing the jurisdictional boundaries between state and federal laws, and they're mostly unwelcome by the federal land managers because they don't know what to do with them. Again, going back to the bill, this bill simply does two things. In page 3, line 2, it says, no new designation shall be made pursuant to this paragraph after July 1, 2011, and the council, I'd like to emphasize this, the council still shall retain authority to remove the designations made prior to that date. That's entirely up to the council. Another important point, I believe, is in section 2 is any current designations of land is very rare and uncommon, made prior to the effective date of this act, shall remain in effect. It's not our purpose to go back and remove any of the work that the Environmental Quality Council has done with respect to this designation. So, Mr. Chairman, that is House Bill 152. I would stand for any questions. Thank you.
Chairman
Childers.
The rotund one. Thank you, Mr. Chair. On and for the bill, I do have a question on page 2, lines 17 through 21. Did I understand you to say that section, and in particular that sentence, was developed last year? Jim Semlick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All that language on page 2 is existing language in the Act. Nothing was changed in the Act because of the V action downstairs, which was not victory.
Thank you.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was a no vote on this bill
pretty much in a minority, I guess you would say. All this bill does is say the EQC can make no more designations. But they can remove designations. And one of the designations was down in the county I'm from, a place called Adobe Town. Very rare. Very uncommon land. It's a place I'm glad they protected. There's no other lands like that in the state. They're not making any more rare and uncommon lands. And I don't think the EQC is some run-amuck agency trying to lock up lands for oil and gas exploration or anything like that. They're a group of Wyoming citizens, a lot like you and I, who look at some lands that are brought to their attention, and if they all agree, maybe they can make this rare and uncommon. So I was against this bill, and just wanted to tell you why. I am glad they protected Adobe Town, and I hope they don't remove it from the designation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Childers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A designation of rare and uncommon has more consequences than just, oh, isn't it nice that it has a rare and uncommon designation. There are restrictions with it that come with it just like any other designation, such as wilderness. And I think we need to be very careful in allowing designations like this to be placed on properties. I'm not saying that it shouldn't ever be done, but I am saying most definitely you need to take a serious look at what you're doing, because, again, those restrictions have unintended consequences with a lot of restrictions.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Speaking as a rare and uncommon political species that would like to remain protected. Sometimes referred to as an endangered species. Thank you, Chairman. I guess I have a couple of questions, and I don't want the body to be confused into thinking that a rare and uncommon designation under the Environmental Quality Act is the same as a wilderness designation under relevant federal laws. It's not. First, I guess I would ask the good chairman how many rare and uncommon designations there have been in Wyoming. I think there have only been two, but I could be in 13. Well, they're pretty rare, too. Few more than there are of my party in this house, but not many more. They only apply under EQC purposes or Environmental Quality Act purposes in mining permits, as far as I know. And I don't believe they are an absolute prohibition. The Environmental Quality Council also has standards that they apply before designating an area as rare and uncommon. And it's really a fairly limited power, and it's been a very limited tool, not used very frequently, and really is for those special places around the state that we want to at least recognize as perhaps needing some special attention. Thank you.
Chairman McComb.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I had a bill up in that committee, so I sat in and listened on the testimony to this bill, and I was shocked at the size of some of these rare areas that they have locked up. I live in where one of these main ones and one that probably gets most of the press that you hear about, and I had no idea of the size, how many hundreds of acres, thousands of acres were locked up and keeps going up, like something like 144,000, I believe it was, that are locked up with this. And yes, you're supposed to be able to go in and drill oil and gas wells, but that doesn't happen because other agencies of other of the federal government get involved in this. So I really think that we need to stop this, sit back and take a look at what's been happening. There are 13 designated sites already in Wyoming, and I am rising strong support of the bill.
Chairman Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I support the bill as well. This is one of those areas where the feds take notice. And when we designate something as rare and uncommon, then it acquires an elevated, heightened level of scrutiny in the feds' mind. And the end result is that we trigger a reaction in the federal government that effectively stops development. Theoretically, it ought to still be able to take place, but as a practical matter, it doesn't. So I think that this is being done at a level in our state government that shouldn't be permitted, and I'm on for the bill.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the bill. I keep hearing again and again, this bill really doesn't do too much. It really helps protect these rare and unique areas in Wyoming. You know, frankly, I don't know an area in Wyoming that is not rare and unique. Every area I go to, and I get to travel the entire state in the business I operate in. I've been to every nook and cranny of this state, and frankly, there's such outstanding areas everywhere. I think some of these areas are more impacted after you make this rare and endangered area designation. Even on the federal level, they get more impacts from the tourists and stuff sometimes. You know, again, this is an incremental thing. It's been going on for 40 years. I've seen the maps, and some of you have seen the maps of the UN, the Biodiversity Treaty. They pretty much show Wyoming is ultimately ending up as a big park. If that's what you want, don't support this bill. If you want to continue to having a strong tax base in Wyoming, support this bill.
Chairman Simon.
Mr. Chairman, courtesy of those who asked the question, I'd like to answer them quickly. With respect to the question, it has been asked and answered from our good colleague from House District 11. The testimony was there was 13 designations that had been made. And with respect to the question and inquiry from our good colleague from the land of the Sweetwater, there's some concern about the Environmental Quality Council having the authority to remove the designations. We could certainly consider some amendments to elevate that standard to make sure that that's done at a higher level, similar to what we tried to do with House Bill 262 2 years ago. Mr. Chairman, if there's no further questions, I'd call for the question on the bill. Thank you.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Simlick's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that the bill number 152 do pass. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
House Bill 152 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 37. The reading of the clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 37, introduced by the Travel Committee and Act relating to the State Archives Storage Study. This bill is referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Botten, Connolly, Yagi, McComey, Petroff, Shepperson, No, McKim, Excuse, Davison, signed representing McComey, Chairman. The bill was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Escobel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace, signed representing Berger, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Chairman McComey, what's your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 37 do pass. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to highlight to the body that this was not given a haircut by appropriations because it is a very something that's needed badly. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to the explanation to the good lady from just over the hill where the our wonderful sports complexes are.
Representative Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It gives me great pleasure to stand here and bring you HB 37, a topic that was studied by your committee number 6 during the interim. We were charged by Management Council to take a good, deep, thorough look into the state archives, and that we did. Not only did we hear about it and go through reams and reams of paper, we also took tours. My guess is, like me, many of you don't know what our state archives is supposed to do. And by statute, our state archives maintains records for all state departments, agencies, and subdivisions of the state government, counties, municipalities, and political subdivisions. Can you imagine the amount of paper that comes to the state archives from these variety of sources? We couldn't, but we did once we got there. And we charged the state archives folks with taking a look at how do they maintain those records and make them easily accessible to the public, which, again, by statute, they're mandated to do. And as we all know, we're in a digital age. And I think, as the good Director of Cultural Resources pointed out, in an age of, I can't probably say it, but those cute little things that we listen to music on and where our fingers go over keyboards all afternoon. In that age, the state archives is really in an age of rotary telephones. And so we charge state archives with looking into how to update their record keeping, how to do it the most effectively and efficiently, and to cost us the least amount of money. What we did is we asked them to put out a request for information for a scope of work for a business analysis to give us the best possible practices for maintaining electronic data within the state archives. I have that scope of work for business analysis with me if anybody would like to ask me questions. They sent it out. They received 10 responses from companies around the country. It would cost between $60,000 and $600,000 to do the work to determine the best practices. We looked carefully at the element at those responses and chose the company that we thought did best in terms of coming up with this bill, which asks for $200,000 to do a study of how to best maintain our electronic archives. And so that's what you see in House Bill 37, is a request for $200,000 for a one-year study to come up with the best practices for maintaining the electronic data, which in the long run will save us probably and easily five times that amount. So I'm ready for any questions, but I ask for your favorable consideration.
Representative Pedersen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to talk a little bit about what came before committee number 2, as my area has been buzzing as to why this was. We literally have millions of dollars of irreplaceable state assets that are in these records. And in looking at the companies, there were a whole series of companies, because we got the whole list of companies, what type of depth to which they answered each of the RFPs, what they brought to the board, what they brought to the table. There's one company that brought to the table and sent out a standardized, basically, pamphlet, had no experience and had a wild guess that this could cost them $600,000 to do. The company that responded, that came in far below that was closer to this 200 mark, was a company who had done it with several other states, several other municipalities, had a track record, and show that they could take this piece on. Not everything that we have can just be digitalized. There's plenty of stuff that we're mandated by both our own statute and by the feds to have accessible via paper. So it's not just as easy as scanning that warehouse of stuff, and then we'll just keep it digitally. There's a lot of items that can't be kept that way. And then, but for the items that can be, and for the items where we can do it, how do we go forward and make that recommendation for all agencies out there? And that's the other important thing. This is for all the agencies and all the pieces that we have to keep in archives. This is actually not a huge budget cost. And what we did is we went in line with the company that was actually gave the most reasonable bid and we felt would do the most thorough job and had a history and a track record of doing this for other states and municipalities. And so with that, I'd urge you to support the bill.
Senator Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't doubt the judgment of the Good Appropriations Committee often, but on this one I have to at least raise a point. $200,000, I mean, we could build a very large barn for $200,000 and probably store everything. I have a really hard time swallowing that, and I don't know how much testimony they took as to what it would take to get the study done, but we could hire several people and have them spend a year looking at this for $200,000.
Chairman Brown.
Mr. Chairman, it's an incredibly complex problem to figure out how to store this stuff in the optimal way. It's not just something you do. They have paper records. They have microfilm records, and they have digital records from every computer system that's ever existed since we started with computers. And they don't have all the computers and the operating systems to even open that stuff anymore. And it is an incredibly complex problem and is eating up more and more floor space. And the stuff can't just be stored out in an old warehouse. It has to be some of it climatically controlled. And it's an extremely difficult problem. So I don't think this is an unreasonable number. And I really like the explanation about the company that proposed to do it, and I just would urge you to vote in favor of this because this is another one of those deals. Pay me a little now or pay me a lot later.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sounds simple. Give me money and we'll study it. All we're asking them to do is come into the 21st century with this record storage. We've had some bills a few years ago. Some of the community colleges that I was working with wanted to not have to file in microfiche anymore. You would have thought the wrath of heaven came down upon me to try to get them to discontinue some of this stuff. And so we're back here again. We don't need a study. They actually need to do some of these things for digital recording all this information. Again, the business world has been doing this for a couple of decades. I don't know why we can't enter not even the 21st century. How about just the end of the 20th century?
Representative Patton.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Audit for the measure, just historically give you one illustration. The legislature starting off in 1889, those documents were put into paper, and if you wanted to find one of those documents, if you wanted to look and read, particularly those first 20 years, there's only two places that you might be able to get it. One is here at the state capitol, and the other one is at the University of Wyoming. But even at the University of Wyoming, I'm not assured that there is a complete set of the digest of the Wyoming legislature. The journal is downstairs, and if you want to go down and try and find it and find something and look at it. The library, state library, undertook the project for approximately $1 million to get a project of the software creation to capture the documents at the library for all of the newspapers in the state of Wyoming. That is completed, it's done, and that system is available. The Management Council this last year was offered by virtue of the Audit Committee, or the Technology Committee, to examine and get an estimate of how we could get those digests copied. The library was very cooperative. It's being done for less than $100,000 for the entire set, and it'll be made available on digital form in every library in the state of Wyoming. So I think that's the kind of thing that we're looking at here with this proposal, looking at other state agencies. So with that, I think it's very positive. It's a good step, and for it. Thank you.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to make one point, and it would behoove some of the critics to go over there and see what the problem is. For one thing, digital storage is not acceptable because it's not permanent, and it is a big problem, and that's why they are microfilming things, because that is the only permanent record that we have. And the Library of Congress has spent something over $1 billion trying to figure out how to save digitized records in a permanent form, and they can't get it done. They can't figure it out. So I would just ask you, consider voting for this bill. If you're going to vote against it and take a pot shot, please go over there and ask them, because there's a lot of layers, and this thing's a lot deeper than just saying, well, you just digitize it all and throw it on a hard drive and you got it. That is not true, and it won't work.
Chairman Byrne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we've almost beaten this to death, but I can't wait until February 14th when we start working on the budget. We're going to probably be here until March 15th. But in regard to the archives on the $200,000 and back to the good sponsor, gentleman that just spoke on microfiche, it is the only stable format that we have nationally that is allowed. It is true, according to a previous speaker, that we have tried to change that preservation format. But to date, it is the only one. We had testimony in our committee in regards to that. To make things a little bit interesting, this is, I think, a very frugal area which has a very daunting job before them. We approved a $20,000 cost for a piece of equipment just to maintain our microfiche equipment. As we're updating automated systems within our agencies, we require that they have a dual digital microfiche process that makes it more efficient so that it does take less time for us to preserve those documents. But keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, that we pick up documents on about a weekly basis, I think, around the state of Wyoming for all local government. So every document that is required at a city, county, and state level have to come to our archives in Cheyenne and be preserved. And I know of instances where we have these documents sitting in hallways, at back doors, in inclement conditions. I do not think that that is a responsible way for us to preserve or to take care of citizens' documents. So I would ask you to vote for this bill.
Representative Varnish.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to be real brief. We beat this to death. I work on computers. I've done a lot of work on computers. I've had CDs and DVDs fail where I couldn't read them a couple years after they were burned. Hard drives crash. I've seen software that we try to open up a Word file, and the formats have changed, and you don't have any software to open it up anymore. So I would encourage you to support this bill. And digital is definitely not the answer. I've seen so much data lost, pictures, everything. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman McComey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with the recommendation of due pass for House Bill 37. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. House Bill 37 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I won't rise and report yet, but if we're debating for 25 minutes on a bill that we all vote for, you can hear what's happening at the end.
Next reading of the bill, our consideration is House Bill number 154. The reading of the clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 154, introduced by Representative Harvey, an act relating to motor vehicle registration. This bill was referred to Committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Bonner, Botten, Kennedy, McKim, Warburg, Vronish, Swanitzer, Dave. No, Peterson. Signed, Representative Korberg, Chairman.
Chairman Korberg, what's your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 154 do pass. And I turn the explanation of this bill over to my good colleague from House District 26.
Chairman Harding.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, finally, here's an easy one and a lighthearted one. This one just says that if you own more than one car and you have a disability that allows you to have a plate with a little wheelchair emblem on it, that you can have as many plates as you have cars. Now, in the past, the policy today is that you can have one set of plates for one vehicle owned by you, and then you can have a placard that can hang from your rearview mirror that if you go in a different car. So let's say a person has an older car that they drive around town, and a plaque, and because that's the car, they have the disability, that's the car that they drive, that they, it's necessary for the plate to be on that car. And they have a placard to go in the family car. Well, the day before, perhaps they've gone with a friend and forgot the placard. So then they get to where they're going the next day in the family car that has a regular license plate. They don't have a placard. And if they have extreme difficulty walking or getting in and out of places, they just don't have any of the choices. There are fines for parking in places where you cannot park unless you have a designated plate or a placard. And so what this does is it just on page 2, lines 10 through 13, the county treasurer shall issue a set of plates for each vehicle and a special license plate for each motorcycle registered to a qualified applicant under this subsection upon payment of required fees. So if you have three cars, you can have plates on all three cars. Now, one of the counter arguments to this would be if there were three cars in this family and they all had plates with a little emblem on it, that it would be very easy for family members to abuse the privilege. But I would submit to you that there is no one who knows more about how difficult it is for their family member to get in and out of cars and in and out of businesses than your own family. And I'm sure that there would be a little bit of abuse, and I'm sure that everybody has had the opportunity when they've seen someone park in a handicapped spot and dash into the store. Well, guess what? I've done that. I've taken my sister, dropped her off at the door. She gets out and into the electric wheelchair. I go park her car, and then I dash into the store. So it may look like abuse, but you don't have the whole story. So this bill just simply gives the opportunity that for every vehicle that you own, you can have a plate that designates that you can park in a space designated for people with disabilities. Very simple bill. If you have any questions, I'll stand for them now.
Any discussion? Question being called. All those in favor? Chairman Korberg's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, do so with a do pass recommendation. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. House Bill 54 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
Motion carries.
The reading clerk will read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. Speaker, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. House Bill 61, recommended do pass. House Joint Resolution Number 6, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 160, recommended do pass. House Bill 182, recommended do pass. House Bill 35, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 152, recommended do pass. House Bill 37, recommended do pass. House Bill 154, recommended do pass. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole report is adopted. We're at that order of business reading and introduction and reference of bills. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 241.
House Bill 241, introduced by Representative Harshman.
First reading of the bill.
Inoculating to school districts assessments.
House Bill 241 is referred to Committee Number 4, Education. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 247.
House Bill 247, introduced by Representative Teeters.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to public education accountability.
House Bill 247 is referred to Committee Number 4, Education. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 245.
House Bill 245, introduced by Representative Wallace.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to animal cruelty.
House Bill 245 is referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 242.
House Bill 242, introduced by Representative Illaway.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to insurance surplus lines.
House Bill 242 is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 235.
House Bill 235, introduced by Representative Roscoe.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to motor vehicles, natural gas vehicles.
House Bill 235 is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 246.
House Bill 246, introduced by Representative Korberg.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to the Military Department and the Board Land of Commissioners, National Guard Disposal of Land.
House Bill 246 is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 240.
House Bill 240, introduced by Representative Blake.
First reading the bill.
An act relating to the Wyoming Occupational Health and Safety Act.
House Bill 240 is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 244.
House Bill 244, introduced by Representative Connolly.
First reading of the bill.
An act regarding unemployment insurance amendments.
House Bill 244 is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. We're at that order of business messages from the Senate.
Message number 167. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form. By the vote indicated, Senate File 57, 100th State Fair Celebration. Ayes 26, noes 2, excused 2. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 168. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 59, Spice Drugs. Ayes 27, noes 1, excused 2. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 169. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 90, Wyoming Nurse Practice Act Amendments. Ayes 24, noes 4, excused 2. Signed, Donnie Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 147, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Blickery, Camel, Childers, Madden, Miller, Peterson, Semlick. No, Vronish, excused, Goggles. Signed, Representative Childers, Chairman.
Committee announcements. Chairman Illway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet Monday upon noon recess in Room House 18. We're going to finish House Bill 179, Energy Improvement Program, and we'll take up House Bill 209, Emergency Medical Review Organizations, and right after that, House Bill 197, Nuisance Abatement, and House Bill 206, Emergency Response Incidents, and if there's time, House Bill 211, County Memorial Hospital Board Members Removal.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet at 8 o'clock Monday morning in Room H18 to consider House Bill 217, Production States Agreement, House Bill 131, Tip Sharing, House Bill 210, Landlord-Tenant Return of Deposits.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet Monday morning at 8:30 a.m. to hear House Bill 155.
Chairman Childers.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 3, Revenue, Monday morning, January 31st, 8 a.m., Room H11. Three bills we'll be considering. House Bill 153, Agriculture Gas Tax Refund Program. House Bill 175, Property Tax Assessed Value. House Bill 185, Fuel Tax Lust Funding.
Chairman Brown.
Mr. Speaker, Judiciary Committee number 1 will meet Monday, January 31st at 8 o'clock a.m. to consider the following bills. House Bill 164, Sexual Assault Victim Advocate. House Bill 187, Administrative Subpoenas.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 6, Travel, will meet Monday at 8 a.m. in Room H10, where we will take up House Bill 93, School Unification Student Count Deletion, and House Bill 236, Complementary Hunting Licenses, Persons with Disabilities.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 4, Education, will meet Monday, January 31st, immediately upon adjournment in H10 for consideration of House Bill 97, Public School Financial Transparency, House Bill 144, School District Bonds, and House Bill 161, Interstate Compact on Student of Military Families.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet Monday upon adjournment, January 31st, for a marathon in Room 302, 15 minutes upon adjournment, where we will hear House Bill 205, Electronic Application Process for Board of Nursing, House Bill 201, Healthcare Qualifications and Advertising, House Bill 215, Department of Health Reorganization, House Bill 172, Department of Health Fiscal Oversight, and House Bill 181, Wage Rate Penalties. So just a short night. Bring your slippers.
Chairman Korberg.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8, Transportation and Military Affairs, will meet Tuesday, February 1st, 10 minutes after adjournment. We will hear House Bill 90, Vehicle Restoration, House Bill 194, Next of Kin Driver's License Option, and House Bill 195, Motor Vehicle Registration Fees.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good work, ladies and gentlemen. We got through seven of the 34 bills on general file today. I move the general file for Monday, January 31st, 2011. The first 10 bills will be House Bill 114, House Bill 6, House Bill 145, House Bill 146, House Bill 66, House Bill 85, House Bill 107, which was the goal for today, House Bill 123, House Bill 167, House Bill 82, House Bill 142, and then the rest that are on the list that is in the process of being handed out. Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until Monday, January 31st, 2011 at 10 a.m.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. What day is Monday? The 31st? House will be adjourned until Monday, January 31st, 2011, 10 a.m.